Although many of us strive to be the best dad we can be, many physicians struggle with finding balance between their life at home and their life at work. This is the Imperfect Dad MD podcast, the show where we discuss topics involving our minds, bodies, beliefs, relationships at home, and upping our game with our business practices and financial knowledge to better improve our role as dad in the lives of those around us. I'm your host, Dr. Jeremy Toffel, physician, husband, father to two boys, and self-proclaimed imperfect dad. Join me as I learn to raise my own imperfections within all these topics. Now, let's get to today's discussion. Hey, what's up, everybody? This is the Imperfect Dad MD podcast with your host, Dr. Jeremy Toffel. And today's episode is a, I don't know if you want to call it an emergency episode or a celebratory episode or whatever, but it's a little bit pulled away from my normal dad talk because today I am discussing kind of quickly the recent approval of the Pfizer mRNA COVID vaccine for kids aged 12 to 15. That just happened this last week, and I really want to get some information out there on it for those of you who haven't looked at it or heard much about it yet or still kind of questioning it. I did a blog post on this as well, so if you're more of a reader and you want to see the numbers, you can go to my website, www.imperfectdadmd.com, and you can see the blog post there. But this is the voice part of that because I want to be able to speak it to people who would rather listen to it. There's a lot of great information out there, guys, so if you're looking to listen or to read other information out there, there's a ton of information on this right now, a lot of great bloggers and physicians are talking about this. Now, when I say bloggers or even physicians, it's important to check your sources and where they're getting their information, because even though we all seem like we know what we're saying, we don't always all know what we're saying. Sadly, I had I'm kind of sidetracking here, but I had a situation where I listened to another physician's podcast this week, and they had a guest on, and that guest was saying a lot of very incorrect information, sadly, about COVID, especially how it applies to kids. They still were referring to COVID as just a bad cold, which it is not. And anybody who keeps saying that, I get a little frustrated about, because that's really not what it is. And it's really downplaying the suffering that we've seen with people who have had problems from COVID. And that tells me that there's something going on there in terms of the message you're trying to push. So I'm not trying to judge somebody. I'm not trying to do that. But if you're taking care of these patients who have had COVID, and I've taken care of pediatric patients with COVID, well and not so well. Not in the hospital setting. I'm in a clinic, but I've sent kids to the hospital because of COVID. You wouldn't be saying the things that this person was saying. So it was kind of frustrating to me, especially with all this news of the vaccine coming out this week. So check your sources, check where you're getting it from. Hopefully you trust me, but if you don't, find somebody you do trust and make sure the sources they have are correct. Okay. So if you're interested in what's going on with the Pfizer vaccine, they just got approved for the 12 to 15 year olds. It was already approved for 16 and above. So the approval for this went a little bit quicker than the initial ones. And the reason why is because this is not a whole brand new emergency use authorization. It is a add-on to the original Pfizer authorization. So that's why this was quicker in terms of, if you want to call it, the vote or the discussion with it. Last time it took a little bit longer when they initially approved the Pfizer vaccine for the 16 and above age group. Now, when you look at this, I know some people are a little concerned about how many kids were involved from a total population. It was a little over 2,000 participants in the study. So not as large, obviously, as the other study, which I know can be concerning. But it's when you're trying to get these studies together, it's not always easy to get, number one, a large population, but number two, to fit the criteria that you're looking for. And so I don't want that to deter you, because there's still really great data that they presented at the meeting to discuss this here this week. And so I'm going to go over that really quick and discuss it. Now, before I get into the data, you may be saying or asking yourself, why do kids need this vaccine? Like, why? I've been hearing all over the place that kids are great, they're basically immune to this thing, or if they get it, it's just a cold, or kids don't have problems with it, so this is silly, why should kids get vaccinated? And those really aren't true statements. Sadly, it's been discussed that way, and I think it's been discussed that way because you're getting that information from a lot of adult physicians. And now, granted, when you compare the adult morbidity and mortality, so those words meaning the bad outcomes that kids or that patients have from the illness, so that mortality is death, morbidity is the complications you have from the illness that don't kill you. So you still can have complications. Adults have more of those. Totally understand that, totally recognize that, and you see that with a lot of different types of infections. But kids still have problems from this. And I think it's pretty disrespectful to our children if we're going to pretend like they don't have issues with this. Okay, I mean, I'm sure nobody out there would want somebody to downplay their child and say, eh, your kid's going to be fine. Well, what happens? Who cares if something happens to them? Because it doesn't happen to a lot of other kids. So whatever. You know, that's I think it's just a ridiculous mindset to have. So if you're going to ask me right now, I'm going to say yes. If you want to get your kid vaccinated, I absolutely recommend you get your kid vaccinated. So putting it out there right now. Now, ultimately, that's your decision as a parent. My kids, once they're old enough and they're approved, they're going to get the vaccine. They already know that. They're already preparing for it. They're not super happy with me with it, but it's going to happen. So, but let's talk about this. Why are we going to vaccinate kids? So when you look at some quick data on kids in COVID, up to May 6th, 2021 this year, there were 3,854,791 confirmed pediatric cases reported. So about 5,122 cases per 100,000 population for people under the age of 18. So that's not a small number. I mean, if you look at pediatric cases, it's gone up. Last year, this time, pediatric cases were about 3% of the total cases. Now they're above 22% and it's climbing. So kids are becoming infected with this now. Now, why is that? Probably because some people have started becoming more relaxed with restrictions. It's getting nicer outside. People, kids are playing back to sports now and those things. And so I'm sure they're, and then you see parents are getting in, they're spreading in their families too. So there's a lot of different reasons why for that. You know, this time last year, kids were out of school. Everything was shut down for kids, all the after school programs and sports and everything. So it's definitely different now. But kids are starting to get more, they're getting more infections from this and more cases of it. And we may start to see more morbidity and mortality if we don't take care of it sooner. So it's something we really do need to watch, because I know you and I know me. My kids are sick of not getting to do as many things as they were before. And I think people are going to start to crack, honestly, especially with the summer months coming up and getting nicer. People are going to be doing more activities. I mean, just look, even today, the CDC announced that we don't have to wear masks if you've been vaccinated, which is great. Although I guarantee there's going to be those people out there who don't get the vaccine and they're going to still not wear their masks. And who knows if they're spreading it to other people, including my children or your children or infants or whatever it is. And so there's always that chance that we're going to see a bump in cases and a bump in complications in this younger age group. And it's always a possibility. When you look at, there was reported numbers of from 24 states, including also numbers from New York City. And you look at pediatric hospitalizations, out of every reason that a kid was hospitalized in those areas, between 1.2 and 3.3% of those patients were COVID patients. So if you had a hospital that took, you know, well, I guess we'll just say 100 kids, then anywhere from 1 to 3 of those were COVID. That sounds like a small number, but when you're spreading that out across the United States and you're getting thousands and thousands of kids in the hospital at one time, that's actually more. And that's at one time, right? These are kids that are coming in and then leaving, coming in and then leaving. And so you're getting this turnover. So what looks like only 3 kids at a time, well, that might be 3 kids every 2 to 3 weeks. So instead of it being 3 kids, now it's 3, 6, 9, 12, and it's adding up over time. So those numbers don't sound as bad when you look at it that way, but if you start to play the game of adding up over time, that can really add up fast. Now, when you look at deaths, I mean, nobody wants their kid to die from anything, right? And when you look at COVID-related deaths in the United States, we've had about 557,486 as of the time that I'm recording this and the data that I looked at. Out of those deaths, 277 were kids reported under the age of 18. Now, again, that doesn't sound like a big number. And that number is actually probably underrepresented. And I think there's actually more evidence out there of higher numbers, maybe even closer to 500. Now, I don't have all the data for that, so I'm not going to give that as a set number. So let's just say 277. That's 277 kids that died. Now, we know kids don't have as many complications from some of these viruses like the older adult population does. Like, let's explain, like the flu. Older people have harder times with the flu than kids do, but kids still die from the flu, and we still protect kids from the flu, right, with flu shots. Now, kids can still die from COVID, so why would we not want to protect our kids and reduce that risk for them to die from COVID? Now, again, that's just cases of death, right? 277. Up to the point of May 3rd of this year, They've had a reported number of about 3,742 cases of MISC. If you're familiar with that, that's the multi-inflammatory system of childhood, secondary to COVID, and it usually shows up several weeks after a COVID infection. And that can cause all kinds of complications with kids, including blood clots and problems with the heart and problems just really through the body. And these kids, they are sick. Like really sick. They've actually had 35 confirmed deaths just from MISC up to this point. And again, that 35 numbers sounds small, relatively speaking, to that 500,000 in the United States. But again, number one, kids weren't getting infected as much as adults in the past. That number's going up. And number two, that's 35 kids. That's potentially 35 families that are affected. And I don't really think we should be downplaying those numbers. So now that we've looked at kind of some morbidity and mortality, let's look at the actual data that they discussed at the meeting. So when you're looking at the data, the three major things that you look at are safety. So how safe is this vaccine for my kid? What is the immune response or the immunogenicity within the body? So how well does it create an antibody response? And then how efficacious? What's the efficacy? How well was it good at preventing symptomatic COVID infection? So let's get into the safety aspect of this first. And again, when you talk about safety, we're talking about the kids have bad outcomes from the vaccine alone, right? We expect our kids, just like ourselves, to have a immunogenicity response. So a response to the vaccine that leads to symptoms in our body. That could be pain at the injection site, redness, fevers, body aches, maybe headaches, fatigue. Those are your body immune system to how it's responding to that shot. Right? So when your body gets exposed to a new antigen or to a foreign body, it creates inflammation at the site so that your body can bring more blood there, which increases the immune response. So that site creates immunity, antibodies, all that stuff to help fight off that infection. So you're going to have symptoms. That's why you get a lot of certain symptoms when you get sick. It's not so much the illness that is causing it in terms of the virus or the bacteria, it's your body's immune response to it, right? That's why a lot of times we talk about in pediatrics with fevers, you don't need to treat the fever all the time because the fever is part of your immune system doing its job. So we're going to expect to see some side effects, or if you want to call them immunogenicity responses or whatever terminology you want to use when you get these vaccines. So what I'm going to do here, there was good information that was presented at the talk that eventually led to the approval of this 12 to 15 age group getting the shot. And what I did is I took that information, put it into some tables. It's going to be on the blog. So again, if you want to look at the table, if you're a visual person, it's all there on the blog. Otherwise, I'm going to read you some numbers here. And what I did is I compared the 12 to 15 year age group to the 16 to 25 year age group that they use as kind of the comparison group. And it was after dose one and dose two, because again, this is Pfizer, so it's two shots. And how does that work? So when you're looking initially at the localized reaction, so localized meaning right at the injection site, so redness, pain, swelling at the injection site within 7 days of either the first dose or the second dose, when you compare those two, with redness at the site, so the site gets red after shot, the 16 to 25-year-old group tended to have a slightly higher rate of that. So they had a 6.4% and 5.7% rate after dose 1 and dose 2, whereas the 12 to 15-year had a 5.8% after first dose 1 and 5% after dose 2. So pretty close, right? If you look at swelling, again, the 16 to 25-year-olds had a slightly higher response to this, 8.3% after dose 1 and 6.8% after dose 2, compared to the 12 to 15-year-olds, who was 6.9% after dose 1 and 4.9% after dose 2. Now, the last one, the pain at the injection site, the 12 to 15-year-olds tended to have a slightly higher rate there compared to the other group. They had the 12 to 15-year-olds after dose 1 was 86.2%, and after dose 2 was 78.9%. And if you compare that to the 16 to 25-year-olds, they were 83.4% and 77.5%. So again, a difference there, but still pretty close. And again, you expect these reactions because you're getting a shot into the muscle there and it's causing localized inflammation, right? Now, when you go down to the systemic symptoms, so these are symptoms that you feel during throughout the body, so fevers, body aches, all those kind of things. These are the numbers within 7 days after each dose. Now, there's more of these, and so this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you some numbers, but what I actually like to do is just talk about who had slightly higher responses, because if I start giving you a whole bunch of numbers, it's going to get really confusing and hard to listen to. Now, I'm going to tell you this. placebo responses were very similar between the age groups in terms of that. And obviously you saw more of these immunogenicity side effects with the vaccine group than the placebo group, because you're getting the actual vaccine, you're going to have a response. So I didn't include placebo numbers here because they were very similar. So when you compare the two and you look at the 12 to 15 year olds versus the 16 to 25 year olds, if you look at the numbers, the 12 to 15 year olds had a slightly higher rate of fevers, fatigue, headaches, chills, and maybe a little bit with the vomiting than the 16 to 25 year olds after getting their doses, both dose one and dose two. For the 16 to 25 year olds, they had a slightly higher rate of diarrhea, muscle pain, and joint pain after each dose. So, but again, they were still pretty close together in most cases. Actually, the ones that were the biggest ones that were separate were like the muscle and the joint pain, which I found kind of interesting when you compare the age groups, because the older age group was 26.9% after dose one compared to the younger age group at 24.1%. But when you get to the second dose, it was 40.8% compared to 32.4% with muscle pain. So why that is, I can't tell you for sure. But I just thought that those muscle joint symptoms were a little bit more common in that older group was kind of interesting. Now, when you look at the third table that I put together, but again, this is all data that I just took from that ACIP presentation and put it into table format. So this is not my data. I'm just putting it into maybe an easier to read format. This is all straight from that information. The third table that I made was looking at adverse events greater than 1% of frequency. So reported more than 1% of the time by system organ class. So just meaning like globalized group. So GI, nervous system, all that kind of stuff. And this is for up to 1 month past the second dose. And so when you look at this, if there was any event, so anything that got reported, at least within that month after the second dose, the 12 to 15 year olds had a 6% rate of this, whereas the older group had a 10.8% rate. So younger group did pretty good there. When you look at general disorders and site conditions, these were the most common reported ones. And what those means are localized site pain still or swelling, fevers, chills, those kind of things like systemic symptoms in those regards. When you look at the 12 to 15 year olds up to a month out, 1.4% were complaining of this. Whereas compared to the older group, it was 3.9%. Now, if you look at GI, so gastrointestinal symptoms like nausea and diarrhea, the younger group was 1.2, whereas the older group was 0.9%, so very close there. And then you look at what they called nervous system, which is really pretty much headaches. I don't know if they included things like dizziness or whatever in there, but they really commented on headaches here. The younger group, 1.1%, the older group, 2.4%. So you saw this kind of that extension there. Now, interesting. Here again, you get back into the muscle pain like I was talking about with the last table. The younger group had zero complaints of muscle pains and joint pain a month out from the second dose. Whereas when you looked at the older group, they had within that musculoskeletal connective tissue group, they had 2.2%. So again, they were still complaining of this, younger group not. Why? I do not know, and I can't tell you why exactly. Now, there were a couple other things reported in that table that I put there, but these were things that just occurred in that month. They were not related to the vaccine, but just they occurred at that time. Now, one thing that we do see in this vaccine still, like we do in the older group, is swollen lymph nodes. So that's called lymphadenopathy. And anytime your kids have been infected with a strep throat infection or viral infection, you probably at times have seen a swollen lymph node in the neck or somewhere else, and that's your lymph node swelling and responding to an infection. It makes sense that, hey, you got a new vaccine, your body's never responded to this, the lymph node's germinal matrix gets excited, swells up, you get a big lymph node, right? So adults, we see this with the vaccine sometimes. In the kids, they saw this too, not a lot of them. So when you looked at it during the study, nine kids in the placebo group, or in the vaccine group, excuse me, and two kids in the placebo group of that 12 to 15 age range got swollen lymph nodes. And it was typically in the left armpit area, so the left axillary area, or the left cervical area, which is on the neck. And usually this popped up within about 2 to 10 days of the vaccine and resolved within about 7 to 10 days, like you typically see with most viruses and even strep throat. Although I'll argue, most viruses and strep throat, your lymph nodes swell up longer. And so maybe it's better than that. Who knows? So that is there if in case you're asking for it. Now, what did they not see? There were zero deaths related to the vaccine in kids this age, which is obviously important. Now, again, smaller population number. Again, we're in the 2,000 range, but still, zero deaths is important. But they also did not see any major neurological conditions like a Bell's palsy situation. They did not see any autoimmune conditions like an MISC, which we're trying to avoid. They didn't see ITP. Now, ITP tends to happen in younger ages, not so much in this 12 to 15 age range, but still, you didn't see that. You didn't see any significant chronic fatigue, heart problems, those kind of things too, which are all good. And I bring up heart problems because when you look at this older group, 12 to 15, and even a little bit older, it is known that if you have a child who gets COVID and gets very sick from it and ends up in the hospital, or if they have moderate illness, and what is moderate illness? That means fever and systemic symptoms like body aches, chills, fatigue, those things, that tells you that the virus is spreading throughout the body, right? And you're getting a systemic response. And they found in those kids that you can get some heart involvement. And that's why if you have a teenage child out there who plays sports and they had COVID, they have to get cleared now, and sometimes from a cardiologist, to go back to playing sports, because they have had kids with significant heart changes after COVID that if you sent them out there and started playing sports, they could easily die from that. So that's extremely important if you're a parent out there and you haven't, if you didn't know that, you should have by now if your kid had COVID, because that should have been told to you. But that's one of the reasons, again, kids this age should get vaccinated, because if you have a kid in this 12 to 15 age range and they are a competitive sport athlete, or it doesn't even have to be sports. I mean, whatever the competitiveness is in terms of using physical activity, high activity levels, you're doing it frequently throughout the week. If they have moderate to severe COVID infection and then they get better from it, they have to have this cardiac workup because they're at risk for it. But if they're vaccinated and you prevent those severe symptoms or these symptomatic infections, you're not going to get these heart changes in the body, right? So again, another reason to get these age ranges vaccinated. Sorry, I digress there a little bit, but I think it was important. Now, we get to the immunogenicity. So how does your body respond in terms of making antibodies? And they utilized a value looking at something called an NT50 value. I'm not going to get into what that means. It just, hey, look, your antibodies are working. The cool thing here, when you're looking at it, how it compared the younger group to the older group. The younger group had a value of 1,239.5 compared to the 16 to 25-year-old group had a value of 705.1, which the placebo groups were like around 10. So obviously you're seeing antibody response. And the great thing here, this younger group had a higher, what appeared to be higher antibody and immune response than even that slightly older group. So maybe they get even protected better when they get these vaccines. I can't say that for sure because again, smaller population sizes, but it's very encouraging to see that because that tells me that number one, they're producing those antibodies, and number two, maybe it means it lasts longer for them. I don't know. Again, totally speculating here, but that's great data to look at. And then finally, efficacy, how well did it work? And you've probably heard about this on the news or something along those lines, but when you looked at the study, 16 kids in the placebo group developed symptomatic COVID. So they got infected with COVID. This was within the time frame of the testing. And then they had two more people who were tested positive prior to the 7-day mark post dose two. So a little bit earlier on during the whole testing. So in total, actually 18 kids, it looks like. Whereas in the vaccine group, they had zero. And again, I recognize smaller population size for the study, but you still see one group with the vaccine had zero, group without the vaccine had 16 to 18. And we saw that too with the older groups that had a larger population size. Then when they were talking about 95%, 99%, whatever efficacy for these things, they work. And are we going to see that 0% infection rate after vaccination once it gets out into these 12 to 15 year olds? No. Kids are going to get the infection. No vaccine is 100% perfect. Anybody tells you that is wrong. No vaccine is 100% perfect. You're going to have those kids who don't respond well to it or still kind of respond, but they still get symptoms when they get infected from it. And so, but you see those numbers and it's just, it shows you, is this vaccine safe for my child? Yes. Does this vaccine produce an immune response in my child? Yes. Does this vaccine prevent symptomatic infection in my child? Yes. And what are we trying to prevent? We're trying to prevent death. We're trying to prevent those cardiac complications. We're trying to prevent these long hauler symptoms. Kids can be long haulers with this. It's not just an adult problem. I have seen multiple children in my clinic with chronic fatigue, chronic issues with breathing, with activity, chest pain, headaches, all of these things after infection from COVID that they never had before. These are long haulers in kids. And the problem is we don't have great setups for these kids because we don't know enough about it yet. And so kids can be affected by this long-term, just like adults can. But you know what stinks for kids too, is that when they're long hauling these symptoms, it's affecting school. It's affecting physical activity and diet. It's affecting their sleep. It's affecting their development. So this is extremely important still, guys. I know the numbers for kids with morbidity and mortality are lower than the adults. I 100% get that. But kids get sick from COVID. And they, even though they don't always die from COVID, just like adults, they have complications. And that is not something we should be turning our heads at. So my final thoughts on this, guys, if you have a child in this age range, or even if they're a little bit older, 17, 18, that's already been approved for 16, and you're kind of not sure what to do, I am telling you this right now as a pediatrician. Now, this is not medical advice because I'm not your kid's doctor, but I'm recommending it to my patients. Now, who have I not recommended it to? The only patients that I might not recommend it to is patients who have had known allergic reactions to previous vaccinations. I can think of at least one patient on the top of my head who they have had a reaction to. It seems like any kind of inoculation they received, this one I probably wouldn't have them get the shot. Would it benefit them? Probably. Because I know if they got COVID, they get really sick. But I have to weigh those risks and benefits, right? And I have a high suspicion that this child, if they were to have a reaction, they could have a reaction to this vaccine. And so those are the hard decision making. So that's why I'm not telling you as a doctor to do it. I'm telling you as a parent that I recommend you do it. But talk to your kid's doctor who knows your kid as their patient, knows their history, and can make appropriate decisions. So I hope you got something out of that. Again, if you want to see the actual numbers, because I know I talk fast and sometimes it's not as clear as maybe as it could be, go to the blog post. It's going to be linked in the show notes. Take a look at the numbers there. And if you got questions, send me a message. I'm at imperfectdadmd@gmail.com. Otherwise, guys, I hope you're staying healthy out there. Stay safe. I know this is a little bit of a divergent message from my normal dad talk. And there was another podcast released today, which is my normal Friday review to my Wednesday episode from this week. So make sure you go listen to that because that goes back to what I talked about on Wednesday. Okay? All right, guys, stay safe, stay healthy out there. I'll see you next week.
My dad, Dr. Jeremy Toffel, is a pediatrician, father, and husband. The information provided in this podcast is not meant to be medical advice and is for your education and entertainment only.